Look, there's so many cool things you can be doing in the garden, not just because it's cold, but it's, you know, sharpen up your secateurs and your saw, start cutting back those deciduous trees, and whether they be the fruiting type or the flowering type. And, you know, you're cutting at this time of the year to promote growth. You know, if you're putting a new tree in, that little stick that you get, it's going to sound really bad, but cut it back and cut it back hard. And that'll actually force it into good growth next year or next season. Also, you're cutting a lot of your trees, you're cutting crop load off in the fruiting trees. So take it as an opportunity to thin out a lot of that fruit, because a lot of trees will fruit their heads off, and that can be a bad thing for the tree. So as a person with a fruit tree, you want to manage that crop load, both for the quality of the fruit that you get next year, but also the health of your tree. Other things, you can be chucking in so many veggies at the moment, all the leaves you want. You can be raising a lot of those big brassicas, things like your cabbages and stuff, under glass, sowing some seed of that around, just raising seedlings. They'll be slow to get going, but they'll be ready to go come sort of mid-August period, when we start to get that sort of warmer burst of two-week weather at that stage, and then, you know, good rains to water them in. And actually, with the rain and with the cold, I actually find it's a really good time to be planting any type of shrubs, as long as they're not frost tender ones. But, you know, it's a really good time of the year to be planting.
Lovely. Thank you, Tino. Give us a call, 1300 222 936, if you would like to ask him a question. And it is time for Gardening Talk, back with Tino Carnevale. So there, Tino, are you ready to rock and roll?
Oh, yes, I am.
Well, so is Lance in Launceston. Hello, Lance.
Good morning. How are you both?
Very well, Lance. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Yes, going well, thank you.
Cool, mate.
Yeah, got a question for Tino, as you expect. Tino, my daughter's got one of those potted orchids. They're brilliant colours. They're normally white or a bluey-purpley colour.
The Phalaenopsis ones? They're little butterfly ones? Yep.
Yeah, it's been in a pot for weeks, probably months, and it's amazing just how well it's just been going on and on.
Yep.
But it's looking like it's past its use-by date. It's probably 40, nearly 50 centimetres high.
Yep.
What's the story with orchids? Do you just cut them off, and what do you do with them?
Oh, hold on, hang about. Is it in a little pot, and it's...
Yes, it is. They're not all that big. You buy them as a gift for someone. And
yep. And is the 40, 50 centimetres high, is that the flower spike?
It's got this long stem, and then on the top it's got probably a dozen or so, 14 brilliant flowers.
Right.
Because they normally have one flower, don't they?
Well, there are a couple on the spike. Is it got long, strappy leaves, or is it got sort of short, stubby, fleshy leaves?
It hasn't got any leaves on the stem at all. And at the top, you just got this bunch of flowers.
What about the leaves on the plant itself, further down near the base?
No, nothing.
There's nothing?
Nothing. It just pops out of the soil, and it's got this...
Are you sure it's not like a plastic one? Because if it doesn't have leaves, I don't know how it's alive.
That's what I thought when I first saw it, but no, it's starting to show signs of, passages by date. Mm. Yeah, it's a wonder you haven't seen it. All of a sudden, they've become very popular.
Yeah, I guess it's the Phalaenopsis orchid, which is the butterfly...
You don't need to be rude. I just want an answer to a question.
Well, if the flowers are spent, what you can do is you go down the stem, if it is the Phalaenopsis orchid, and you can just go down the stem. From the base, there should be about two nodes up. You'll see two little growth points up the stem, and you can cut to the top one of those.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Right.
Yeah.
What's at the base of an orchid, like under the soil? What is there?
You've got your roots and your specialised stem, generally, which is sort of a clumpy bit of flesh, and then usually you've got leaves that come out of that. But, so that's what's going on sort of underneath the ground. And then you just get that flower spike that shoots to the sky and usually has, a couple of flowers on the top of it. So those node points up, those little bits of... growth, I suppose, up that stem. That's your new flower spikes for next next time.
Yeah, okay, now does it need repotting, new soil?
Not really. If it's only been a couple of months, most potting mixes will last, I'll give you a couple of years. And in the case of orchids, you don't really want to pot them up into bigger pots too soon. They like to fill the ends of their pots. I mean, orchids, a lot of them will grow in like the cleft of trees or in between rocks, etc. So they like to sort of be caged, I suppose. They like to fill the ends of things. So, you know, I wouldn't pot it up until it really, really needs it, as far as, and the best way of checking that is when you water your plant or when you feed it, it still stays droopy and it still stays yellow. And that means that there's just no more room in the pot for the roots. And yeah, then's a good time. But you probably won't need to do that for another year or two. And when you do it up into the next size pot. So you don't want to sort of go up into a big pot. You just want to go into a slightly bigger pot than the one it's in.
Food? What kind of food would you give it?
Food, orchid food. There's a bloom. There's actual just straight orchid food, and then there's bloom booster. Okay. I'd say for what you want when you pot it up to feed it is just the straight orchid food.
Okay.
So. Now, Lance, can I ask you maybe to send us a photo of that?
Yeah.
What do we send it to, Tino?
So send us a text.
I'll send you a text.
Just
okay.
0438 922 936.
I haven't got it, it's my daughter's, but I'll get her to do that.
That'd be brilliant, Lance. And if anyone's got any ideas, just in case, let us know. Ring in, text.
They're very popular. You see them around a lot now. And I even saw them on an English show I was watching. I thought, good Lord, they've pinched my daughter's. <They're exactly the same. Yeah. Okay.
Cheers,
all right,
Lance. Thanks, Lance. Bye. We've got plenty of lines free if you would like to get some gardening advice from Tino. The number is 1-300-222-936. Tino, you've got a plug?
While we've got time. There's a plant sale on at the Royal Tasmanian Botanical Gardens from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock on Tuesday, June the 4th. There's lots of stuff there. The best thing actually is the books. I even saw like a Peter Kundal book in there, The Practical Gardeners, but there's really good sort of reference books. But, I mean, that's great, but there's plants as well. There's things like yakon. If you've never tried it, it's kind of cucumbery, underground cucumber. It's delicious. Jerusalem artichokes, horseradish, elephant garlic, which is kind of like a leek. And then there's these cool plants called puyas. Yeah, I know. They're called puyas. So I've got a juvenile mind. But they're big and spiky, but they've got an amazing blue flower on them. So, yeah, get in there on Tuesday. All's good.
Now, someone has sent in this text saying, is this the orchid you were talking about?
Yeah, that's the Phalaenopsis.
It sounds like it, but we're not 100% sure.
Yeah.
Because they've sent us a beautiful photo.
That's a lovely
one. And it's got a really nice glass pot.
Yeah.
With kind of that, is it sphagnum moss or something around the roots?
Sometimes the problem with glass pots is, and it's fine for orchids, but you got UV coming in on the root zones. Roots are generally subterranean. Orchids, you can get away with it because, as I said, they live in clefts of trees and stuff. So they get a little bit of UV on their roots. But, yeah, that's a lovely example of a Phalaenopsis orchid. So,
on the text, the Signet Market is on tomorrow. That's Sunday from 10 a.m. till 2 p.m. Thank you very much for that. G'day, Tino. Says Damien in Outlands, in the outland of Outlands. Are you able to identify this tree for me, please, and how big will it get?
But
it'd be an oak, wouldn't it? That looks like an oak tree to me, like in terms of the leaves.
Yep, it is. It's not. Oh, it could be. Could be the, not, hold on, I always get these mixed up. There's Quercus robusta and Quercus rubrum. And I think that's the robusta, I think, is the English, and the rubrum is the other one. I think that's what it is.
And there's a version of it from far away.
So I've got a computer screen in the way of the computer screen. That looks like it. Yeah. From over here.
So
I'd say it's you got an oak. what type of oak that is, I'd say it's not the English, but yeah, there's many forms of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of oak trees in the world.
Yes.
Well, I'm amazed. I knew a gardening question.
You did very well. All right, I'll be back at 10:02.
Let us move on to Frank in Georgetown and his pumpkins. G'day, Frank.
Good morning. How are we?
Oh, very well, Frank. You got some pumpkins, mate.
Yeah, but one or two of them are giving me a major problem.
What was...
When we go to cut them open,
yeah,
inside the pumpkin, and you cannot see any difference between any of the pumpkins, is a white crystal. And the white crystal can be as big as a 50-cent coin, and it can be riddled with it, and there's no way you can get a knife to go through that crystal.
It's a hard bit of...
It's a hard white crystal.
It's like calcification or something.
I've been growing Queensland blue pumpkins now for nearly 40-odd years, and yeah, it's only the last couple of years this has happened. I've taken samples over to different garden centres, and one was Plants Plus over the other side of the river.
Yeah.
They done a research, and they could not give me an answer on the problem.
Wow. Look, that might have to be a bit of homework for me. It could be when there's... Sometimes when there's like a calcium deficiency in your soil, you can certainly get, and boron as well, you can certainly get the inside of the fruit acting strangely, usually, or even stems in cauliflower, you know, you can get split stems. But that do you normally lime? Do you add lime to your soil?
I rotate gardens all the year.
Yeah, that should be.
And one year I will grow peas in it.
Yep.
And then follow that with corn.
Yep.
And then the next year I'll possibly put either pumpkins or carrots or something in the same ground.
Yep.
But I've got five different beds, and I only lime the one bed each year when I'm growing the peas in it and the corn.
Yep. So, no, that should be sufficient. That should be enough.
I use a fair bit of blood and bone. I've got access to a lot of manures, different either chicken manure or cow manure, and I've also got access to a lot of seaweed, which I do use a hell of a lot of, I admit.
Yeah.
I use it and normally make paths in the garden with seaweed, and then the following year I dig it in because it's all crushed up and gone to powder.
So it's all there? Washed off, so there's not a salt issue there. Look, I might have to go away, find out about that, and unless anybody else has got any tips or encountered this.
And again, a photo, please, Frank.
Yeah. I can't send you a photo because I've thrown the pumpkins out now, the ones that we've cut out. Unless I cut one up, I've still got about six left. If I happen to cut one up, I took a sample over to Gardens Plus over Lagana.
Yep.
And they went through the computer and searched, and they couldn't give me an answer.
Well, look, I just Googled crystal inside pumpkin and got nothing.
Yeah, I did the same.
I got weird shops selling crystals in the shape of pumpkins, and that's all I got. So,
no, look, I'll do a bit of research. I've got quite a few reference books, although I am doing adult Jenga at the moment and moving house. But if anybody else has got anything, let us know. But if not, if you could be listening at this time or a little bit earlier next week,
I
won't be able to do it because I've got something on.
That's all right. It goes up online and you can listen to it online later.
Okay,
and if not, if you do miss it, ring in 2 weeks' time or 3 weeks' time when you can, and we'll see if
we'll let you know what's going on. Good on you, Frank. Thank you.
Cheers,
thanks,
Frank.
Mate. Oh, a
mystery. That's great. I like it.
I'm just worried that he's on cursed ground or something. That witch doctor has cursed his pumpkins.
I've watched
forever.
A lot of horror films. Attack of the Killer Pumpkins.
Yeah, exactly. If you've got a question for Tino Carnevale, give us a call. 1-300-222-936 is the number. Let's go to Bruce in Ulverston. Bruce, good morning. What can we do for you?
Good morning. Can I take lavender cuttings now, as long as I keep them into warm shed?
Lavender?
Yeah.
Look, just make sure that well, I mean, make sure that there's no flowers on the end of it, you know, which can be hard with lavender because they tend to want to flower all the time. But, nice soft bit. And I try to take a bit of a heel cutting, so rip some of that older wood down at the end of the cutting. But, no, they should strike quite well as long as they're warm enough. Sometimes people use a bit of warmer water. They'll put them on their hot water cylinder for that bottom heat. Or you can invest in a little bit of a tray. But to be honest, you can stick them in a glass jar in a nice sunny windowsill and they'll construct from that. Is it the straight angustifolia, do you know, or is it...
It's what I heard it called. It's the French...
French, yeah.
The French one with the corrugated leaves.
Yeah, yeah, no, they'll take quite easily. Also, you might even be worthwhile checking around underneath the plants. You might even find some young seedlings of them as well. They'll tend to seed as well. So, yeah, by all means, take many. I kind of have a rotation system going with a lot of my lavenders where I'll plonk them in the ground and then I'll let them grow for a year, maybe two, get some nice soft growth, and then strip off a whole bunch of cuttings off that plant, propagate them on, grow them on for another year, and then, you know, usually you're getting this sort of filling out a 6-inch pot, and then that lavender that's been in the ground, the parent one, after about 4 years can sometimes get a little bit old and matty, so you can just take them out and replant with the new one. So, you know, if you want that constant sort of fresh lavender look, because, you know, once they get to 5-6 years old, depending on how they've grown and how you've maintained them, they can start to look a little bit old and get a little bit sort of scrubby.
Yes, I want flowers all the year round because they feed the bees.
Yep. Mm. Yeah, they are one of the best things for bees. Bees love them. And, you know, in some ways for spring period anyway, a lavender hedge, which is what I had out my back door at my last place, it was like the sound of spring because, you know, the bees would just come along and there'd just be a hum and it'd move. So it's a really nice sort of thing to have in your garden.
Yeah, I get bumblebees on the lavender at my house and it's lovely.
The jumbo jets of this.
They sound like a drunk bee to me.
I don't want too many bumblebees. I eat a few of the honeybees.
Yeah. And they bonk into my head. I'll be having my head down, bum up, kind of weeding. And you hear this coming and you lift your head up and they don't move. They just go straight into
it. It thinks you're a beautiful flower, Tino.
A flower.
Good on you, Bruce. Thank you.
Cheers,
Bruce. Good luck with your propagating.
Mate.
Bob in Andover. Hello. What can we do for you?
Hello, Joel. Hello, Tino.
Morning, Bob. How are we doing?
We're inquisitive. That's how we're doing.
Oh, that's a good way to be.
I was looking at a catalogue the other day, Banksia roses, and I love Banksia roses.
They are nice.
But I hate the conventional roses because they're possum food. And we all know about possum.
I have a different relationship with normal conventional roses. It's been one of, you know, great bloodletting, generally. But it's always a case of, you know, you as a landscape gardener and maintenance person, you'd always have a phone call from an old lady saying, oh, I've got a few shrubs, you know, can you come around and give them a prune? And you're like, okay, what kind of shrubs? And they go, oh, just sort of green kind of ones. And you're like, okay, you know, suitably vague. And then you organize the time, you go around to the garden and it's just wall-to-wall roses. And yeah, I've just start bleeding looking at them mostly.
Well, I love the Banksia roses.
They are beautiful.
And seeing that I got 42 fruit trees around my garden and a whole lot of natives as well, I'm getting a bit restricted in room.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious, Banksia roses, how evasive are their roots? And how do you keep them compact? And can you plant two Banksia roses in the same hole, a yellow one and a white one?
Ooh, That's a good idea. Invasive roots, not too bad in my experience. I've had a lot on fence lines and they haven't really taken over. As far as keeping them compact, that's a different story. They tend to be quite vigorous once they get established. Growing them up a structure is kind of a must. If you're short of space, using that vertical space in your garden is a really good idea. But they can be, you know, like all of those climbing plants, they do need a solid structure because, you know, they're going to be up there for a good decade or so, you know, depending how everything goes. I, in the past, have used Rio mesh. It's a strip mesh that you use for sort of drains. It's quite cheap. It's steel. You can bend it into a nice archway and you can sort of... I've grown climbing...
I'll be doing better than that. I'll be using... pine logs.
All right.
Pine logs.
Yeah, yeah, they'll grow quite happily up that. And the two plants in the one hole, look, you can give it a go. I do it a lot with things like birch trees. I've even done it with fruiting trees like apples. They can be quite happy as long as they've got enough water and enough food and that you control the strongest one in its growth. Because like in nature, competition, one will outdo the other. There will always be the stronger of the two. So as the gardener, you need to sort of keep the stronger one in check and give the weaker one a chance. And sometimes that can change. The weaker one can be the stronger one, in 1 year, etc. So, yeah, you need to sort of keep that well balanced. If you're going to do that, I'd give it a go just because they are so tough. But I've never actually tried it with a Banksia rose myself in the past. So I can't speak from experience.
You can experiment and tell us the results, Bob.
Yeah.
And what do possums think of Banksia roses?
They quite like them for their flowers. Possums, in my opinion, will eat anything just depending on the year and the possum. I think some of us like, you know, on a Friday night, like a chicken parmigiana. Others like, you know, noodles, for one of it. So I think their flavors change, and this year's been particularly tough because I think there hasn't been much food out into, you know, forage for them. So they've come into gardens, they've started eating the things that they're familiar with, and then they sort of went on to the things that they were unfamiliar with. And so possums, I think, probably have cast iron stomachs, and their taste buds probably are very broad.
So they might do the pruning for me.
They may well, Bob.
Can work for you. And look, with a lot of the cases with things like possums like that, you just need to get your plant up to a critical mass. You know, you need to get it mature enough so the possums will come along and take that new growth, you know, in essence, prune it for you. But still the plant will have enough leaf and enough growth to keep it alive. So
it's not just... in my place. They just leave the stalk.
Gotta say though, we have some of the toughest possums in the world here. That's a point of pride for me, you know.
So. Good on you, Bob. Thank you.
Thanks,
best of luck with your Banksia roses. I can't half tell you're Italian, Tino.
Why's that?
You try to think up examples of two different foods and they were both pasta.
Parmigiana. What's in noodles? I was like, black bean noodles. But I see where you're going with that. I was trying to get it east and west, but I actually just went west and southern Mediterranean.
Now, Lance has sent through a photo of his orchid, and it does have leaves. It has enormous leaves at the bottom. And
yeah, it's an impressive spike.
That's beautiful pink, kind of pink to purple flowers. Yeah. They're really lovely. And he's right, there's like a dozen flowers on that.
That's a pretty good spike.
Big, fleshy, flat leaves. So what is that? Yeah. Is that a Phalaenopsis?
Phalaenopsis orchid. Yeah, PH. That'll be fine in that pot for quite a while. Once those flowers finished, you can see it starting to happen already. Take it down to the second node point up from the soil, which will probably be about 5 centimetres from the base of the soil. Just have a look along it. You'll see a bit of a rough bit. But, yeah. They look all right. And the leaves, it's looking a little bit like it needs maybe check the water level on it, see if it's got sitting in too much water, or if it hasn't been watered, give it a water. And yeah, being inside, you could give it a little bit of a feed as well. Might pick it up a bit. So
there you go, Lance. Thank you for the photo. That's actually really helpful for this particular one. And Damien from Outlands, he says, yes, it really is Outlands. how big will his oak grow?
Oh, those, they can get big. Yeah, we're looking at, you're looking at like a couple of hundred, if not a 1,000-year-old tree. So, you know,
you can have an entire nest of druids living in it.
Yeah, that's it. You know, but the thing is they are slow. So, and oaks tend to drop those acorns, and those acorns will shoot, and you'll end up with seedlings. So it's important to control the base of the tree with a mower, etc. So, but those big legacy trees that will be there well beyond where we've sort of gone to the compost heap are such a nice idea. You know, you're leaving something for future generations, and if it's, you know, if it's those big old oaks, I drive past a couple on the way into town, and you know, they're majestic. You know, I love blue gums; they're probably my favorite, one of my favorite trees. But big old oaks, you know, there's something really, really regal about them.
Yeah, absolutely, and I do love the idea of planting something that your grandchildren or great grandchildren will see as a big, beautiful tree that it may not be in your lifetime. I think that's a lovely thing to do.
Probably just a stick, actually. Now,
Eddie from Windermere says, "I agree with Tino. We need an album of versions of English Country Garden. I'm not so sure about that one myself.
I like jazz hits."
Kay from Austin's Ferry. I'm willing to bet that I've got a jazz version of it somewhere. Kay from Austin's Ferry says, not sure if Tino knows about Tiger Track stamps. This is a lovely project that Kay has just invented, where she has made beautiful little ink stamps to go in different tourism places around Tasmania. And the idea is that you collect them.
Oh.
And all these places saw the ones that she's made and have put their hands up and said, can we have one? And so there's like 100 different places around Tassie where you can get these stamps. That's... And she is saying that the Royal Tasmanian Botanical Gardens has a stamp of the month during June.
Oh, brilliant.
When people get the stamp in June, they get a free fridge magnet. So, yeah, Botanical Gardens, or go there and get yourself a Tiger Track stamp. So you can get yourself a little booklet. And
yeah,
it's like passport. It's lovely. That's... It's really nice if you've got kids.
I love those
when you're touring
things
around. So
there's a rock. I started finding rocks around the place, and they're part of a similar thing where, you know, they'll leave little rocks places and you
little,
find them.
Little geocaching thing where you go and find them. And
such a good idea. It's so interactive. And yeah, kids love it.
All right. In a moment, we're going on to the lightning round to see how many texts we can get through.
Good morning, Nahood, with Joel, Ryan Berger on ABC Radio Hobart and Across Tasmania. Weekends with Joel, Ryan Berger on ABC Radio Hobart and Across Tasmania.
Peter in Acton Park has been hanging on. Before we get to the text, we'll get to you, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you, Joel, and good morning, Tino.
Morning. How are you doing? Thanks for being so patient.
That's fine. My question is, I've got some renovations happening here at the moment, and I've got a lot of plaster offcuts left over, including the cornices and all the rest of it. And as you know, a plasterboard is some sort of plaster inside which is coated in paper.
Yep.
Now, I've got a heavy-duty shredder and a chipper.
Yep.
So I'm thinking, because, you know, there's a lot of this plaster dust around as well, which is like talcum powder.
Yeah, it's chip
I'm
side,
thinking
I think.
If I was to run that through the shredder, the chipper, could I use that as like a garden mulch?
Yeah, I think I haven't, because I've never actually done any plastering, but I think it's gypsite, which is gypsum.
Really? Oh, wow.
I think so. Look, I'd have to check that up completely.
They used to call it gyprock, didn't they?
Yeah, gyprock. Yeah. And I mean, it's been a while since I've had anything to do with plaster, but I do remember an old farmer somewhere doing the same thing where they smashed it all up into bits and put it onto their garden. But yeah, I wouldn't be 100% just in case there's an additive in that plasterboard. I think it is gypsum. I think it is gypsum, but just in case there's another additive in there, it could
maybe
be.
Maybe if I Googled it, I might come up with what's actually in it.
Look, I've actually found a case online of a company who was fixing up an old hospital, and they had a ton, like literally tons of that as waste. and they broke it down so the size was small enough to be useful in the soil. So feeding it through Peter's shredder would obviously do that job. But they then put it into compost.
Yeah, yeah.
So it would you wouldn't just dump it a lot on top because you'd just end up with this white layer that would turn to concrete in the next rain.
Which might be the desired effect. Hopefully not. Yeah, but like with anything, like with a lot of additives to your ground, like that, it's best to put them through a composting system. Yeah, definitely. But
okay, we've got the thick, heavy black clay here as well. And when you said gypsum, I thought, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be good.
Yeah, if it's reactive clay, if it is the gypsum. But what you can do is actually put that in a – mix that with a whole bunch of other stuff, leave it for a couple of months just to settle down, and then you could spread that onto your clay and you'd still have the same effects.
Fabulous. That's great. Thank you very much.
Cool,
mate.
No worries. Yeah. Thank you, Peter. Look, this mob named Seawise did a total of 1,400 tons of plasterboard recycled into compost over like a number of years.
That chip is going to be working really hard.
All right. Are you ready for lightning round?
No, but let's bring it on.
Here we go. Let's see how quickly we can do this. Hi, Tino. I have two dwarf Meyer lemons in pots, which I bought recently and they are living in my glass house.
Cool.
One is flowering and the other has fruit. They're in plastic pots. I want to put them into larger tubs. When should I repot, says Roz?
I'd wait until the fruit's off, or certainly this flush of fruit on that tree that's fruiting. I usually knock all the flowers off if it's a first year one anyway, so I'd be going through the flowering one and knocking that off, and you could do it now as long as you're quite gentle with the root system. You usually get these first-year-old citrus trees in from, well, I don't know, anywhere like the Murray Valley, et cetera. So you don't really generally have a root-bound pot. You know, they're just filled out nicely. So you can usually just plonk it out of the plastic pot and shove it into a slightly larger one. Not too big straight away. Again, just sort of pot up in increments if that's a possibility. And I usually wait until sort of springtime. But if it's in a hot house, if that's where they're staying, do it now. You'll be fine. Just knock off the flowers.
Graham says, is there anything I can grow as a hedge that the roos and possums won't destroy? He's at St. Mary's.
All right, hedgerow that the possums and if you want something that's above, say, a metre, or below a metre, I should say, things like English box and stuff, they can tend to leave alone. Whatever you use, though, at some stage, or it's a good idea when you put it in to actually barrier it off, just till, as I said before, the plant gets established and matures and then gets a critical mass, and then basically they're pruning it for you. They're just going for the soft growth and the soft tips. So, but the plant needs to be big enough to be able to self-sustain itself. So that didn't make sense. But, yeah, kind of got the gist.
It needs to be big and tough, basically.
Big and tough, yeah.
So that they only take the soft bits and the inside's too hard and they're not going to bother with it.
Things like Coria alba, the local, I think they call it the native fuchsia, but gets up to about 1.5 metres. That's a really good hedging plant for a little low one. A lot of the natives, you know, even the local waratah, if you're up at a bit of altitude or you've got a nice sort of undercover area with a a bunch of trees, they're good for shady spots, and they tend to be a little bit higher. Lavender's a good one for a low one. Things like Escalonia, you could look up. There's quite a few sort of short ones and high ones. They've got quite a glossy leaf and a good sort of flower on them. Luma apiculata is a bit of an exotic one that has a nice smell of citrus once it's in flower over the end of summer, I think, and that trims up beautifully. And anybody else? There's obviously your straight old Pitostrums, which you get, but they have a tendency to be short-lived and can be a bit temperamental in the wrong conditions. I think that's probably that's a good amount for the lightning round.
My recommendation for something that won't be eaten by roos and possums is triffids.
Triffids, yeah.
It's about the only thing I reckon. Paul in Navigina says, howdy, I have New Zealand yams 1 year old. I think they're called ockers.
Yep.
They've got pink skin and a pale yellow centre. Mm. They still have tops on and they aren't dying back. Now, I want to build up stock, so can I just leave them in and not harvest them, maybe mulch to protect them from frost?
Yeah, most definitely. You can sort of you leave them in there. The frost will take the top off if you haven't mulched them. But yeah, in times past, I've just mulched the whole plant. And usually with ocker, you are harvesting it kind of now-ish or autumn through to now. And if you can keep that ground, this is for next year, if you can keep that ground, though, a little bit warmer over that autumn period, your tubers will size up quite well. One thing you might want to do now, though, is just have a little bit of bandicoot around where the plant is. If you've got a really high like density of tubers in that one area, which I suspect if they've been in for the whole season, you might, it's a good idea to go through and thin those when the plant completely dies down and replant them or eat them. And actually when you're preparing them, unlike potatoes, dig them up, leave them out in the sun for a day or for a couple of hours and then cook them that night. They're really quite nice. I like them, and we have sort of a root vegetable bake kind of tray, but they can go a little bit mushy and they can be a little bit oxalic. So I've just found those couple of hours out in the open air and in the sun can just give them that little bit more form and flavor.
Diana says, good morning, Tino. My celery has rust-like spots on the leaves and stems. I reckon it's rust. Is it lacking some mineral or something else or circulation? I planted 20 of them in a block with good spacing.
Yeah, look, it's probably rust. If it comes off and it's a rusty looking thing, it's rust. That's why I love those ones. It's, you know, what's in the tin. One thing you can do to control that, your air circulation, you're spot on. Like if you've got good spacing, then a lot of these fungal problems can happen due to bad, poor air circulation. But strip off the affected stems and leaves. With obviously, you've got to leave a certain amount. You know, an old technique, if for ones around it, it won't control the rust there. But, you know, is one part full cream milk to five parts water. It's just as a deterrent. The problem with that is it's liquid and just washes off. So it can be, its efficacy is debatable. But, you know, in certain situations it can work. But, yeah, certainly just stripping off those affected bits of foliage and stem can help to minimise that problem, I suppose.
Mike from Dover says, can I take mushroom samples to the Royal Botanical Gardens for identification?
Actually, you know what? I'm not too sure. I think they do soil. There are a bunch of Facebook pages, Tasmanian Fungi. Contacting them and seeing where the local places are would be good. My rule with mushrooms, if in doubt, don't. So, you know, it depends on and what you're wanting them for. But the Facebook is a good resource for that kind of thing to get in touch with people in the know, and they can direct you off forward. But as far as the botanical gardens goes, I'm not too sure. But anyone from the Bot Gardens, if you can ring in and let us know.
Yeah. Look, you can always give the Botanical Gardens a call yourself and see if they'll do that for you. That might be a simple thing there.
Probably on Monday.
I'm going to answer this one. Ben says, is it too late to plant a wintergreen manure crop? No, it's not, because Tino was recommending doing it only last week. So I'm going to just say, yes, you can do that. Rika says, good morning, Joel and Tino. I'm coughing too much to speak on the radio. How to prepare very hard, unwilling soil.
Unwilling soil.
Yeah, like it's recalcitrant. Not a
Send
real
it to
open
the naughty corner.
So not a real open sun area. She can't do tilling and digging because she's too old. Shade from the east side. Lots of frost. Even now, it's still frozen.
Yeah,
they're in Perth. Only other sun is western at the front. Would a plastic house help here?
I hope your cough gets better. You can build up on top of what you've got. It does cost a little bit because you have to buy in the materials. You know, things like bales of straw, bags of manure, they can all be very useful. And then even potting mix. You know, once you've built up, you can use the potting mix as the medium to get the roots, you know, keep the roots wet and protected. And then as the straw and the manure and that all break down, the roots will get down into that, and that'll break down into a compost or a medium for those plants to grow in. That can be a really effective way of dealing with recalcitrant soil. A bit of gypsum can actually work quite well to just loosen that soil up. Usually it's done in conjunction with a bit of cultivation, but it doesn't have to be. It can be sort of laid on top, and then you can sort of build up doing the no-dig method on top of that. They'd work quite well. I usually let the plants, you know, in really bad things, let the plants do the job for me. So you could sprinkle a whole bunch of green manure around, although that does involve sort of having to bash it down and dig it back through later. Or what you can do is plant a whole bunch of lettuce, get a crop out of it. But when you harvest that lettuce, cut it off at the base and leave the roots in the ground and let them die and break down, and that way they'll form little air pockets through the soil. So
it's,
the next,
it's already done the digging for
that's
you.
That's it. And then hopefully by the addition of more organic matter, you're getting earthworms in there that will end up doing the worm work for you. And look, you know, yeah, this can take 3 to 4 years, but it can also happen, you know, it won't happen overnight, but it can happen within a season depending on how you prepare it. And you can certainly have soil that's more workable and, you know, even friable in a couple of years' time by really not even having to turn a sod.
I kind of wonder if you can get shoes that would do it for you.
Like, oh,
if
yeah,
you,
the
if
spiky you shoes.
Got golf cleats or something and walked around on that.
They have lawn aerators where they're like sandals that you slip onto your shoes and then you just walk around. They're about, you know, the spikes are about, you know, 3-4 inches long.
Well, that might be an answer for someone who's not ready for digging, at least to get some turnover in the soil there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Start adding the mulch on top.
Yeah. Just getting that aerated a little bit, that would work quite well. You do, if you're anything like me though, you'll look like a bit of a goose walking around in them. It's an interesting walk. It's the John Cleese sort of school of funny walks walk, because you kind of got to lift your knees, you know, and then stamp back down again. But no, things like that.
Put on some square dancing music. No one will know the difference, Tino. We'll get back onto the phones. If you've got a question, 1-300-222-936 right after this.
I'm Helen Shield. I'm hosting a panel all about the art of Dr. Julie Goff. Julie herself will be there, as will the senior curator of TMAC, Dr. Mary Knight, NGA's Francesca Cabillo, and Macquarie University's Professor Joseph Puglisi. Come and explore the unsettling space between conflicting and subsumed Australian histories as Trawulwe artist Julie Goff's latest work, Tense Past, opens for Dark Mofo. Love to see you for the panel, Monday the 10th of June in the Central Gallery at TMAC. Details abc.net.au/Hobart.
Those shoes are called aerating spike shoes. Saxon Lawn Aerator Sandals is available at one of the big hardware warehouses. So, yeah, and exactly as Tina described them, they strap on over your gardening boots and they have kind of 2 or 3 inch spikes on the bottom of it to walk around.
Talked a big game, 4 to 5 inches.
you were thinking that you were in the band Kiss for a moment there, weren't you?
Yeah, just remember to take them off before you get onto the concrete slab.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And don't tread on anyone's toes. Yeah. That's bad news. All right, let us move on to Tony in Launceston. Hello, Tony.
G'day, Joe. How are you going? And Tony.
Good morning, Tony.
I've got some experience with that, putting plasterboard on soil.
Yes, yep.
Because I excavated a large, let's say 100 tonnes on a fence line and had a big area that I had to level off, and the rain was washing the clay sort of down. So yep. I had heaps and heaps of plasterboard from a workshop, that new style plasterboard. I just put it down as it was to stop, act as a roof sort of thing.
As a mulch layer,
but
pretty
that,
much.
That was a few years ago, and now the whole native grasses are taken over, growing beautifully. Like, there's just no issue with the stuff. It just broke it all down, and it just took care of it. Like, you wouldn't even know. Like, there's no sign of anything left now. Like, it's growing like a Trojan.
That's it. Yeah, you see, like, plasterboard chucked into an old paddock somewhere or down the side of a house, and it's usually gone pretty quickly.
Yeah, the plaster's gone. You have the paper bit wrapping on top, but if you're going through the mulch, as our previous caller was suggesting, I reckon that's going to be gone in no time flat.
Thanks so much.
Lovely, mate. Tony. Thank you very much.
No worries, bye.
Thanks. Cheers.
Always lovely to hear the wisdom of our listeners.
Well, that's the practical application. He's tried it. He's had a go. It works. It works. You know.
Paul is in Sheffield. Hello, Paul.
Good morning. Oh, actually, on seeking outside intervention as well. A fair while ago, I asked about a cherry tree to prune really heavy.
Yeah.
And you said leave it till winter. Is it now all
yeah.
right?
Yeah, now that it's lost all its leaves, you can prune it back, yeah.
Right. And the main thing is I'm going to build a big hedgerow with London plane trees. It's a big windbreak.
Yeah.
And you know London plane?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What other big deciduous tree leaf would you suggest?
One thing about the London plane, yeah. You don't get hay fever, do you?
Pardon?
Do you get hay fever at all?
Not really, I'm a farmer.
Okay. So. Yeah, yeah. And if I do get it, I don't even pay it no heed. So.
That's right.
Ain't got time to snort my nose. Just that they've got a really fine pollen, and it can be, a lot of people with hay fever, they can be a real problem with them. Other deciduous trees with a lovely leaf, the liquid ambers, they've got great autumn colour.
Right. Do they grow really big like the London plane?
Yeah, they do. They get quite large.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of those big ones. And they're probably the London plane, the Platanus officinalis, I think, just to make myself sound a bit more intelligent, they are quick growing. You know, they really can take off to the sky once they're established, and you'll end up, you know, with a big tree quick. Liquid amber are sort of similar. They'll do a very similar thing. I mean, a lot of the other ones that they use as street trees and stuff are things like the alders. They can tend to be quite a good sort of deciduous tree. They've got a smaller leaf. I like them less than those big leaf sort of like the liquid amber and the plane tree, but you know, they are very tough. Things like the ashes, if you're in a windy area,
yep.
They tend to be a little bit brittle sometimes, so I'd probably go against them, except for the claret ash maybe, which is sort of a semi-deciduous. It's got that big sort of purple color during the autumn. What else? Oaks, but slow, very, very slow, unless you get something like a pin oak, which tends to be a little bit quicker. And what else? Oh, the golden elm. It's a big tree and it's slow, but, you know, we talk about those legacy trees. For me, the golden elm is fantastic. It's got a rounder kind of leaf. It's quite big. And the yellow, obviously golden, the leaf goes, and certainly this time of the year and a bit earlier on, is just fantastic. And for me, a lot of those big trees, those big sort of deciduous trees, they're the signs on the landscape for me to do certain things. Like the golden elm in my old street was, once that started to change colour, that was a sign that the overnight temperatures are getting lower, and that's means that the ground's getting colder, and that's usually when I put my garlic in. So, you know, they can be useful trees for not just beauty or for windbreak. They can actually be good guides for you in the landscape to tell you what's actually going on. But you're a farmer, so you're across all that anyway. But yeah, there's a few ideas.
The main thing is I've been searching around a hakea. I was told there's a hakea you can get up in this up for the cold, and it hosts the native wasp. And I've asked around everywhere, no one seems to know. But what the thing is, when the wasps are feeding, they plant their eggs into the corbies and cockchafers.
Yep. Yep.
And I've asked everyone and no one seems to know, but there might be someone listening on the wireless that might be able to help me.
Yeah, actually, if there's some entomologist out there that knows the relationship between the hakea and the native wasp, that'd be great. If not, that's another bit of my homework. If we don't get one of those, listen next week.
Well, we do occasionally have bug talkback,
yeah.
So insect talkback. So we might actually get an entomologist to answer that one rather than the gardener.
Yeah, yeah. Although I've got to say though, those hakeas, the pincushion hakeas, have just found one on our new farm. And it's right outside, sort of near where the house is, and they're just amazing. You know, they're beautiful plants for most of the year, and then they come out and flower, and they're just fantastic. So, yeah, and if they're good for native bees or native wasps, fantastic.
Apparently there's only a couple that can grow at altitude, and one of them is the host. If I can find that, I want to put that in front of the native plains and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
No, good on you, mate.
All
well
right.
done.
Thank you very much.
Cool. I'll look into
Thank
that
you very
for
much
you.
For that, Paul. Much appreciated. Now, someone says, g'day, Tino and Joel. How's this for a band name for gardeners? Obviously for our English Country Garden album. funny funky fungus.
Oh, yeah. Or that'd probably be mycologists, I'd say.
Yeah.
We'd be funky funky fuchsias. Or,
Don't say that again because that's a risk. I bad enough last week I had a weather person have trouble with the phrase cold front. It went very bad. Gotcha. We just didn't mention it. We just let that go and moved on. The spike shoes, I'm told also on the text, are available at one of the discount stores at Shiploads.
Cool. Yeah.
I'll just say the name of the stop, damn it. They're available at Shiploads, so that's just another way you can get hold of those. We've got a few more callers. It's only 6 minutes to 10. We'll see how many we can get through. Gilbert in Launceston, how are the slugs troubling you?
Morning, Gilbert.
Good morning, boys. I'll be very quick. My two young cherry trees, which I've had in the ground for about 2 years, the leaves just aren't growing at all. They're just being well and truly attacked by these black slugs. Oh. I've taken the tip of putting lime around the base of the tree, and I've also put it in water and sprayed it on. I've then given it a bit of a break and then sprayed it with another product called Success.
Yep.
For about 3 weeks in a row. And the poor trees are just, they've had absolutely just not any leaves at all.
Have you still got the slugs?
Well,
or is that earlier this year?
I can't see them because the leaves are just been shredded.
Nah, look, it's pear and cherry slug. It usually comes out sort of mid-spring. You can smell them too. They've got a really distinctive smell. The lime works well. I actually use fire ash, just sieved or ash or straight out of the fire, and just chuck it over the top of them. It desiccates them all, dries them out instantly. They're actually a caterpillar. They're not a slug. It's called pear and cherry slug, but they're the larvae of the sawfly, so they just look like a little tiny fly. Now, as far as what you can do early in the season, because they come out during the warmer months, and generally we only get two generations. We get one sort of mid-spring and then another one or a bit later than that, and one about mid-summer, and then, you know, that's kind of it for the season. But I've noticed over the last couple of years, and this goes back to your climate
thingy.
Talking
about climate change,
The third generation coming up through. In Victoria, they get a third generation. And that can just, you know, they strip the leaves of your tree. So, yeah, lime can work quite well. Things like Success, which are caterpillar killers. Yeah, got that in. They can work quite well on them too. But I found fire ash is if you've got a fireplace or you've got someone who has a fire, just getting a bucket of that and chucking it over. But you need to repeat the process. You know, if three generations, usually I do three or four applications for two generations. So for three generations, you're probably looking at five and six over that period. And if it's a monster tree, like if it's a really big cherry tree, one thing you can do is over the summer period is give that a good cut back. If that's what you want to keep it lower and manageable, then you can sort of cut that back and then control it for that year. And then hopefully the following season won't be as bad. And yeah, you'll be able to keep their numbers down. But people do use, people do use the lime, but during the summer months, sometimes that can be a bit of you run the risk if you use, say, hydrated lime of burning the leaves. So just be sparing with that as well.
Yeah, well, the trees are only just a bit over a metre tall, so they're very, very young trees. So.
Yeah, chuck a bit of ash over them and start early on next season. On young trees like that, I've trained my 7-year-old Eden to squish them or flick them off. I was doing it, but then you get this sort of ooky green sludgy stuff all over you. It's not the nicest. And she loves it. I know what that says about her. So.
No gloves or nothing, just dancing around in the garden squashing stuff. Thanks, Gilbert.
Best of luck, Gilbert.
All right. Cheers, mate. I think we can still get to Brian in Liffey. Hello, Brian.
G'day, Joel. G'day, Tino.
Morning, Brian. How are you doing?
Good. I'm very well.
Excellent.
Just a quick question. I've planted a green manure crop for a couple of 3 months ago, and it's just gone crazy. It's about a metre and a half tall, and it's gone to seed. Should I be digging that in now, or shouldn't I have let that go to seed?
I probably wouldn't have let it go to seed that far. Usually by that stage, they're starting to use up a lot of those that energy. And plus, you know, then you've got seed bank in the soil that'll continue to grow at the wrong time of the year, but that's fine. You can just weed it out. No, I'd be going through now. If it's that big, you might even, you know, I'd be better off, depending on the size of the area, just getting a brush cutter out and brush cutting it down. It does the same thing, and then digging it through. But, you know, a good fork or a good scythe hook, you know, slash hook is what I've used in the past. I've got my grandfather's old one.
A proper scythe.
Oh, no, I've just got the slash or fern hook, but scythe hook would be dead.
Have you ever actually used a proper scythe?
Yeah, I know. It's a sharp one. They're fantastic.
They're just the best thing ever, aren't they?
Scary, but
yeah, absolutely. You realise the power of these old things.
And you have to do the whole, like, I've come for your soul, death kind of, you know, the Grim Reaper thing when you've got one in your hands. But no, you should be fine. You're still getting that that green, you know, that green fibrous material, that organic matter down into that soil. So this is, you know, it's not such a bad thing, Brian. You'll be fine. Just dig it through now, and then it'll be nice and rested and ready for, you know, your next crop to go in either in spring or later this season.
Good on you, Brian. Thank you so much for that.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, mate. Brian and Liffey, thank you very much. Tino, we will see you again in a week's time.
As always, a pleasure.